Christ? Do you like to think about that? 1 Corinthians 2, verse 2, Paul said, "For I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." Same apostle would write to the Galatians in Galatians 6, 14, "But God forbid, heaven forbid, that I should glory, that I should boast, except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ." Do you like to think about the cross? Psychologists talk about a principle called hedonistic adaptation. Now, I don't even know what that is, but we do. We all know what that is. That's what's happening when a child wants a new toy. You know, their room is full of them. They've lost more than some kids will ever have, but they want a new one. A new one. The old is worn out, right? That doesn't just happen with children, though, right? Are you more excited at the time of a new purchase or some months later? Right? Years later. My mother-in-law is not here. I don't think she listens to my lessons. She got a new car, but didn't like it. And so a few months later, it's already worn out and needed a new one. That's okay, right? But even adults are like that. Over time, we get used to having the object. We get used to the new job or the new experience or the milestone. You know, that has its advantages. It's the principle that we leverage when we're trying to move past some tragedy or trauma. We hope that time will help heal the wounds. It is destructive in an addict who tries and tries again to repeat the highs of the first time. Overall, though, it's not good or bad. It just is. Right? It can be destructive. It can be helpful, but we do adapt. Well, what about the cross? Do we get used to it? Do you remember when you obeyed the gospel? Remember when you embraced the gospel and were baptized into Christ? Do you remember how fresh and how clean the morning of your new birth was? Right? Are you used to it? How can you tell? It's easy, right? Do the shadows of the cross fall upon you daily? Do you live in sight of Calvary within your family? You know, at home, in private, in public, at work, wherever you may be, do you live and with honor bear the name of Jesus Christ? I hope we don't get used to the cross, but we can, right? I hope it doesn't grow dim, but it can. Hear the rooster crow. It's daylight. And they bind Jesus and they take Him to Pilate. No, they waited outside. They didn't want to go inside His headquarters and defile themselves. They wouldn't be able to eat the Passover. They were very scrupulous in their murderous intentions. Isn't that amazing? We're going to have this man killed, but we can't defile ourselves. That wouldn't be right. So the chief priest waited outside and Pilate came out to them. They said, "We have this man, this troublemaker. He's been causing problems from Galilee and throughout Judea. He claims that he's the king of the Jews." Are you the king of the Jews? "I am exactly what you have said." "Well, I don't find anything in him that I need to trouble myself with. Why don't you take him? And why don't you judge him according to your own law? Try him according to your own statutes." "No, that's not good enough, because we want him put to death. I don't find any crime in him that is worthy of death." Well, he is a Galilean after all, so send him over to Herod. He belongs to Herod's jurisdiction. Herod questioned him for a long time. He had waited for a long time to see Jesus. He had heard about him. He had hoped to see some trick or a miracle, to be amazed by his power. But Jesus never said a word. It's the only man on record Jesus never said a word to, refused to talk with. Jesus never said a word to that disgusting Herod. Oh, they laughed and they sneered. They put him in a purple robe and they sent him back to Pilate. You know, there is this tradition, right? Where a person is released at the Passover, why don't I just release to you this king of yours? And the crowd started chanting, Barabbas, Barabbas, the insurrectionist, that murderer. Release to us Barabbas. Well, what am I going to do with Jesus, your king, who's called the Christ? He had him beaten. He had him scourged. Maybe that will satisfy them. Here's your king. John 19:5, behold the man. And they said, crucify him. Crucify him. So he delivered Jesus over to them to be crucified. They brought him to the pavement. If you want to turn to John 19, it's where we are. They brought him to the inner court of Pilate's residence. The soldiers began to make fun of him. They bow down before him. They hit him on the head. They spit in his face. King of the Jews. King of the Jews. They get a cross. They put it on his back and they lead him away to be crucified to the place where the state performed executions. I was reading somewhere, the crossbeam itself, right, may have weighed at least 100 pounds. Now think about all that Jesus had been through up to that point and had survived. Lesser man would not have survived. 100 pounds, that would be a massive type of cross that would be used over and over again. It wasn't, you know, just a one-time thing. It was heavy duty. Heavy duty. Well, we know what Jesus went through this night. We know the disappointment. We know the agony. We know that he looked into the face of his disciples and he said, all of you will betray me, deny me tonight. You'll be scattered as the shepherd is smitten. I won't. No, I won't. Though all of them may do that, I will not, said Peter, yes, you will. Yes, you will. He had been up all night. He had prayed so intensely in the garden. You remember that God sent an angel to strengthen him. He had prayed alone. He had begged his friends just to stay, to try to be awake with him, just be with him. They couldn't stay awake, even for an hour. And the mob came and arrested him. Judas, with his kiss of betrayal, handed him over. I can tell you where he is. I can tell you where you can get him apart from the crowd. And so we did. Led him down to the house of the high priest, as we were saying. They interrogated him. Brought false charges against him. The witnesses could not agree, even among themselves. They blindfolded him. They hit him. Oh, and then they would hit him and say, oh, prophesy, who hit you? Who hit you? He went through that all night. Into the halls of Pilate, he went finally to be flogged. beaten mercilessly, and now he bears his cross. Tradition says that he fell at the city gate. We don't know that, but if we're to infer anything, it's that Jesus was not going as fast as the soldiers would have preferred. Why do I say that? Because Matthew, Mark, and Luke all remind us that there was a man. There was a man coming from the countryside. Simon of Cyrene. Guess you can see that. Cyrene, it's circled. It was an ancient location. You're not going to find modern Cyrene, so to say it now. It's called Tripoli. It's in northern Africa. You see Libya there beside Egypt. So Simon was from Africa, the northern part. But now he's in Jerusalem. If you're like me, your geography skills may not be very good. He is a long way from home. Had he come, this is fascinating to me, had he come here for the Passover, there was a synagogue in Jerusalem for the people of Cyrene. Had Simon's family moved to Cyrene some years ago? I don't know. But they all identify him in this light, and they want us to know. Matthew, Mark, and Luke want us to know exactly who it was. It was Simon, the man from Cyrene, who was coming in from the countryside. And they compelled him. They compelled him. What does that mean? They were not asking for volunteers. Right? Do you remember in the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus was talking about the situation in which early Christians might find themselves? If someone compels you, he said, to go 1 mile, do what? Right? A Roman soldier could do that. They could just see you coming along somewhere. Paul could have been on a missionary journey and stop you and say, you're going to carry my load. You're going to carry it 1 mile. Do that, Jesus said. You know how that can happen. And take it 2 miles. Well, do you think the soldiers were going to carry the cross? Do you think they were going to say, oh, we can carry it for you? I don't think so. So here was a man who just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, and they forced him. Some have wondered if this was Simon's very first trip to Jerusalem to observe the Passover. I don't know. But if that's the case, don't you know what a very special occasion that would have been for him? And if that's the case, and really either way, what do you think Simon must have thought about his horrible luck? His terrible luck, as he no doubt would have seen it, of having to carry the cross of this condemned man. You know, we look back and, well, that's Jesus. He's carrying Jesus' cross. Is that how he saw it when it happened? No. Do you think he thought, you know, his vacation was ruined, so to speak? I mean, here I am. You know, it was some 1,600 miles. I guess that's as the crow flies. 1,600 miles from Cyrene, which again, Tripoli, to Jerusalem. 1,600 miles. It wasn't every day that he came to Jerusalem, you know. 1,600 miles away from his home. And here is this. What is happening today? I'm walking up. Looks like they're executing someone. And oh no. And here we are. We're here to worship. you know? We're here for services. And I, what is this? I'm having to do what? Participate. I'm going to be involved in this execution. What horrible luck. What awful fortune, right? As he would have seen it at the time. He did not know. He could not have known at that moment what we know now. That it was his Maker who was going to the cross that day. And in reality, it was Simon's cross that Jesus was carrying up Calvary's hill that day. And yours and mine as well. You know, Simon heard the women crying, didn't he? He heard Jesus say, "Don't cry for me. Blessed the day is coming. Blessed are those who never gave birth to children and never nursed their little babies, because they are going to cry to the mountains to fall upon them. The day is coming. If they do these things when the tree is green, what do you think's going to happen when it's dry?" What does that mean? Simon, what does that mean? But he walks on with the timber on his back. The Bible specifically gives us the recollection, Luke 23, verse 26, that Simon followed Jesus, followed him to Calvary. When they compelled Simon to carry the cross, Jesus walked on ahead. Simon followed behind, carrying the cross. You know, there's an expression about trying to keep something fresh in our minds and the propensity that we have sometimes of forgetting. It's not do we forget. It's not do we forget, it's how soon we forget. Jesus would be crucified. He would be buried. And even though He was raised on that glorious Sunday morning, even though some days later when Pentecost rolled around, the church would be established, 3,000 souls saved. How many more thousands upon thousands would just simply go back to their regular lives? How soon they would forget. You know, back in Deuteronomy chapter 6, God warned the children of Israel when they were about to go and take possession of the promised land. Through Moses, you recall Deuteronomy 6, 10 through 12, he said, "You're going to come to this land. You're going to have houses that you did not build." He said, "You're going to have wells that you didn't dig. You're going to have vineyards that you didn't plant. And when you enjoy all of these wonderful blessings from me," God said, "be careful." Be careful. What did He say? "Lest you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of bondage and gave you this land." Beware, it's going to be a temptation. It's going to be a problem. You know, when things are good, you'll get used to it. And soon you will forget. And how soon and how often they did. You know, why do we forget? Why do things that we should remember, why does the memory diminish? Time erodes it. Maybe temptation compromises the weight of the memory. Discouragement settles in, and how soon we forget. But I tell you, I believe there was one man who could not forget, even if he tried. Simon of Cyrene. When he thought about it, he could feel the weight of the cross. Could he not? When he thought about it, he could see in his mind's eye Jesus leading the way to Calvary. He could see his hair, that matted, bloody hair from the crown of thorns and the beatings that he took on the head. Was the Lord's coat soaked with blood from the flogging that he took? Were the back of his legs bloody? Were his heels bloody? Were his sandals filled with blood? Was there a trail, I guess is what I'm saying, was there a trail, in essence, that Simon followed? Do you think he could remember that? I mean, do you think it was every day that Simon bore someone's cross to their death? And what would it be like? What would it be like? Some hours, some days, some weeks, when it hit him, I wasn't just a passerby. I wasn't just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I didn't just bear his cross for a short distance. That was my cross. And he bore it for me, for all eternity. Do you think he ever made that connection? This was the Son of God. In his footsteps, I followed. Do you think when he heard the recollections, when he heard maybe the sermons later, or maybe when he read for himself in the Gospels a few years later, that he comes across a passage, right, where Jesus says, "Let a man take up his cross and follow me." What do you think he thought about? If anyone will be my disciple, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. What do you think went through his mind? But here's what Mark says as he recounts this scene. He said there was a man passing by, coming out of the country, Simon of Cyrene. But listen to him. Listen to him. Mark 15:21. The father of Alexander and Rufus. And you say, all right, that so what? That means nothing to me. I know no Alexander or Rufus. Maybe not. Maybe not. But Mark did. Mark did. And this is important, and those to whom he sent that good news of the gospel did too. Right? I mean, why identify him by who his children are? Why identify him by who his children are? It's because the readers knew who Alexander and Rufus were. And you know, there's only one other time. There's only one other time the name Rufus is found in the Bible. It's in Romans 16. Romans 16, if you want to turn. And while there's no positive identification here, I am convinced this is the same man for several reasons. For one thing, remember, you know, it's like asking who was buried in Grant's tomb. Romans was written to the Romans. But Mark, and this is something to remember, Mark's audience was a Roman audience. Remember, Matthew wrote to the Jews, right? John writes a more cosmopolitan gospel. Mark wrote to the Romans. How do we know that? Well, there's several reasons why. First of all, Mark utilizes a number of Latin expressions, Latin words throughout his book, identifying the nature of his audience. Mark will explain Jewish customs that no Jew would need an explanation of. He wouldn't explain a Jewish custom to a Jewish audience. He wasn't writing to a Jewish audience. And here's another reason. Mark's writing Mark's writing to Romans because there is a man who lived in Rome whose name was Rufus. In Romans 16:13, among the 24 and more individuals that Paul lists when he sends his letter to Rome, he says, "Greetings to Rufus." Who's Rufus? He's the son of Simon of Cyrene. And Paul says this, "And greetings to Rufus's mother and my mother." What do you mean, Paul? "This woman has cared for me. This woman has mothered me. She is a Christian mother to me." Paul had, in some fashion, been associated with the wife of Simon of Cyrene and knew their son. Now, what I'm saying is this, that based on these passages, somewhere down the road, I don't know when, we're not told, somewhere down the road after that fateful Friday morning when our Lord was crucified, somewhere down the road, I am convinced that Simon of Cyrene did more than just remember or recall the incident. He made the connection with what happened that day, and he became a Christian. One day he remembered it in an entirely new light, an entirely different light. And I very seriously doubt he could ever forget. And I imagine he would have had a dawning realization. Can you imagine what it would have been like? He didn't know at the time. He didn't know at the time. We read back into things and assume. He didn't know at the time. But what do you think later when he thought, you can just see him connecting the dots, putting two and two together. Think about this. He had heard the women crying, right? "Isn't this an awful thing they said that's happening to this poor man? And he hasn't done anything worthy of this." And what did Jesus say? Simon heard it. Simon heard it. What did Jesus say? He said, "Don't cry for me." He said, "You weep for the people who reject me. You weep for what's coming on this city. Because if they can reject me, if they can kill me, if they can kill the innocent, wonderful, beautiful Son of God, what do you think is going to happen to them? Wretches that they are, when the wrath of God is poured out." Simon had heard it with his own ears. He heard Jesus say, and one day he would understand it, he heard Jesus say that to be on the outs with God, to be on the wrong side with God, to be facing the justice of God because of our sins, oh, we will cry out to the mountains, "Fall upon us, hide us, oh, hide us from the wrath to come." And Simon would realize, as every Christian had, that that's not going to work, is it? You're going to be able to crawl in a hole when Jesus returns? You're going to be able to hide out somewhere when Jesus comes back? I don't think so. There's only one way. There's only one way to escape the wrath of God. And you know what that is. Jesus died for you. Jesus died for you. You know, I know I'm talking to an audience, most likely already everyone here is a Christian, maybe very few who have not obeyed the gospel. But I want you to think about that. Think about that as we worship God later today. Think about that while Chance preaches to us. And I want you to think about that when he extends the invitation. There is only one way to escape the wrath of God. Jesus died for you. He made a way for us. Simon heard that. It wasn't just that Simon, that was the Messiah, and I carried his cross. It was, I remember what he said. He said, if you're on the outs with God, you're going to try to hide when He comes back and tell the mountains to fall on you, but it's not going to work. I've got to get right. I've got to make my life right with God. And that's what he did. It wasn't just the academic connection that he made. Oh, this is the Christ. It was the emotional connection as well. And I've got to obey Him. I've got to be baptized for the forgiveness of my sins. Has the memory of that grown cold for you? Or do you live daily in the shadows of the cross? Do you feel its weight? Or has time eroded the memory? Has temptation compromised you? So maybe you don't fight as vigorously as you once did. Has trouble discouraged you? It's so easy to get discouraged to the point where you don't feel the weight of the cross anymore. The old preachers used to talk about that. Have you been to Calvary lately? I've heard sermons on that. I heard a preacher say, if you're not giving as you should, you have not been to Calvary lately. And it would apply across the board. If you forget, you know, we feel sorry sometimes for ourselves or for our plight, and then have we been there lately? You know, what is the secret? What is the secret to making the cross fresh and heavy and meaningful so that it invigorates us? It takes this right here. I can tell you that. It takes this Lord's Supper every single Lord's Day. It is His day. This day does not belong to me. Will you think about His body today? Will you think about His blood? Will you say, I feel the weight of the cross, and I feel the weight of my sins that Jesus bore for me? Feel that daily. Feel that weekly. In gratitude and in humility, we ought to live in the precious shadows of the cross of Jesus Christ. I heard a lesson once on Mary, the mother of Jesus. And it was entitled, Mary's First Communion. I think that was given at Polishing the Pulpit. I think you could probably access that lesson. You ought to listen to it. Mary's First Communion. Wayne Jackson preached it. And he examined, you know, does the Lord's Supper ever lose its meaning for you? Do you go through the motions we partake? You know, are we paying attention? It's just so easy. You've taken the bread, the fruit of the vine, and before you know it, it's over. The next part of worship has started. And what did we just do? And he explored the life of Mary, the mother of Jesus, and how she had been told, remember when they brought the baby Jesus to present Him and she was told, yea, a sword shall pierce through your own soul also? And Mary thought, what does that mean? She pondered these things. She kept them in her heart. And then her boy grows up, this boy that she had nursed from a babe. He grows up to manhood. And one day, he's crucified. Right? Mary, the last mention of Mary's there in Acts, she's with the disciples on Pentecost. She's there with them. Acts 2:42 says, they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, fellowship, the breaking of bread, the Lord's Supper. So the inference is, on that day of Pentecost, which was a Sunday, the church was established, they partook of the Lord's Supper. They partook of the Lord's Supper. Jesus had said when He instituted it, take, eat, this is my body. Do this in remembrance of me. This is my blood, which is given for you. What do you think He said Mary thought the first time Mary partook, every time Mary partook of the Lord's Supper? Do you think it meant something to her? You know, thinking about the little hands that she had held as a boy, watched Him grow, now she's partaking of the bread, which is emblematic of His body, and then the blood that He shed on Calvary, her son's blood. Do you think her mind wandered? Was she thinking about other things? What would it have been like for Mary to observe the Lord's Supper? You think about that when you observe the Lord's Supper. Let it focus your mind when you partake. And think about Simon of Cyrene when the cross begins to grow cold to you, if it's dim, if it's distant. And we don't always feel it, do we? I remember the story may have been told here. Alan may have told it. I know Brother Winkler had, I guess it was B.C. Goodpasture, it was B.C. Goodpasture for a gospel meeting where he was, and he wanted him to preach a sermon on the crucifixion. We've got to have you preach. That was one of his, I guess, go-to sermons. We've got to have you preach. And he said, well, I'll think about it, Brother Winkler. I'll think about it. He said, I don't always feel it. He said, I have to be in the right frame of mind. Right? We're human. We're human. Sometimes the cross seems so distant to you. We ought to feel the weight. We ought to feel the weight of that cross so that we can truly say, we can say with confidence and with joy, today I am crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who lives. Christ lives in me. And the life I'm going to live today, oh Father, I'm going to live in faith. Faith in Your loving Son who loved me and gave His life for me. God help us. God help us to live with vivid recollection daily of the cross of Jesus Christ. Thank you this morning for your attendance. Thank you for your fine attention, your reflection upon these impressions from the gospel record.